All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Harm, I saw the title of today's show, which is Jonathan Lekier-Mackey is coming to Vancouver, featuring Dave Hall. But then I saw the thumbnail that says Jonathan Lekier-Mackey is coming to town, or Lekier-Mackey, however you want to pronounce it, is coming to town. And it made me think of doing like a Canucks Christmas album, where it was like, instead of Santa Claus is coming to town, is Jonathan Lekier-Mackey is coming to town.
That when we're in March. But you'll have to enlighten me.
I think I'm going to work on it. That'll be my off-season project. People are always asking, what do you guys do in the off-season? That's what we're going to do. We're going to record a Christmas album. We got a whole
July,
studio.
In July, yeah.
Christmas in July. There you go. Harm's feeling the spirit. Dave Quadrelli alongside Harmon Dial, our technical producer, the man at the controls, is Grady Sass. This is a Friday edition of Canucks Conversation, coming off a big Vancouver Canucks win. Another convincing win against a lesser team, and we're going to break it all down. And we're going to talk to Dave Hall later about, as you guessed, Jonathan Lekier-Mackey coming to town. But as always, I need to tell you that Canucks Conversation is brought to you by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain. Wow. Whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps, the BZ4X will get you through it all. I don't know how I fumbled that. I had an iced coffee and I needed to get some water, and I read the word rain, but that's also with an R. I don't know why I said terrain, but terrain is what the BZ4X will get you through. It'll get you through it all. It'll get you through a little stumble in your ad read. I wish I had a BZ4X on me right now. That's a new series idea. Canucks Army and Cars. Canucks Army and Cars. You do the show from the car.
Yeah, very original idea. Don't know where that one came from.
Well, hey, if the Canucks are going to steal all our ideas, we're going to steal theirs back. So anyways, let's get to it.
Funny enough, my dad is the one that coordinates the cars with Toyota Pacific or Toyota Canada and actually cleans them, gets them all prepped for the Canucks. So, hey, we could have an in there.
There you go. We've got our
sponsor too.
That's right. Yep. We're coming. It's all part of the plan of getting Canucks Army and Cars.
Quad's plan.
That's right. Completely original idea, just like the Monday mailbag over at Canucks.com. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to our recap of last night's game, which is brought to you by Four Winds Brewing, and specifically a certain beer called Velo. If you're looking for an easy drinking beer that will quench your thirst after a day on the ice or on the golf course, depending on how your season's going, Velo is for you. This American Pale Ale was brewed with fresh squeezed lemon juice and pink Himalayan salt. Citrusy and refreshing, Velo is like the sports drink of beers. And at only 4.5%, it won't weigh you down either. You can grab yourself a six-pack of Velo at select liquor stores across BC or for home delivery through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Look at that beautiful can. I'll tell you what, Four Winds Brewing has the nicest cans, and you can go get yourself some nice cans by going down to Four Winds Brewing in Delta, BC, River Road in Delta. Locally owned and operated. Go to fourwindsbrewing.ca. Okay, Harm, let's talk about last night's game. I think we need to start with Casey DeSmith. That's where I want to start, at least, because I thought the Canucks played a solid game, but similar to when they were having their success earlier in the year, a lot of the nights there was a Thatcher Demko save that really stood out as being one where it was like, okay, that's what either allowed the Canucks to come back. That's what allowed the Canucks to hold on to their lead. That's what allowed the Canucks to win the game in some sort of way. And those are the timely saves that you need from your goaltender. DeSmith's been good since Demko's gone down and since DeSmith's been the Canucks starter. But last night, I think, was one of the first games he's played where I saw at least like two marquee saves. Obviously, there was the breakaway save off Brendan Gallagher. You know, that changes the complexion of the game. There was one later as well. I can't remember who shot it, but there were a few chances where I stood up and said, okay, that is a save that's going to be something that we remember at the end of the game. Funny enough, I can't remember who shot it, but Casey DeSmith was very, very good on Thursday night.
Absolutely. It really felt like in the first 10 minutes that the Canucks were a little bit sleepy out of the gates, which happens sometimes for teams. I know in our case in Vancouver, even when the Canucks lose, it seems like they come out firing. So this was a bit of a curveball. Maybe it's because there were so many Habs fans in the building and there was an early go Habs go chant. But yeah, it really felt like Montreal just had an extra half step there in terms of their work rate and what they don't really have in talent, they do have in competitiveness. That's something that I know Marty St. Louis isn't with the team right now, but the way he coaches, that's his sort of imprint on that team, is just how hungry they are, how they forecheck. And it's part of the reason why Montreal fans have gotten behind this rebuild, is because they see young players and they see a team that's actually competitive. And definitely in the first 10 minutes, I mean, DeSmith had the save on Jake Evans. He had Gallagher in the slot even before Gallagher's breakaway save. And then there were a couple of turning points in the first period, right? First was Elias Pettersson, I think, just drawing that penalty in the first place. The little dangle into the slot, which stopped Montreal from being able to continue spending time in Vancouver's offensive end, even though the Canucks didn't really get anything from the power play after DeSmith made the save shorthanded or at the end of that power play. It felt like the Canucks then started to wake up a little bit. And then to even extend the point on DeSmith and goaltending, you also saw the reverse where Zadorov's opening goal, even though there was a screen in front, ultimately it's a point shot that doesn't deflect or bounce off anything. And I'm no goalie expert, but Montembeau, I think, should be able to seal his post. So you have DeSmith holding down the fort for the first 10 minutes or so, making a number of marquee saves. And then you have a bit of a letdown goal from the Canadiens, a softie that probably shouldn't go in. Goaltending's really swung the favor. And then from there, the Canucks didn't look back. That's when they really put the boot down.
Yeah, and again, you kind of brought it up at the start. They're a hardworking team. It reminded me of any time the Canucks had success from like 2016 to 2019. Like those Travis Green teams that really wanted to be a hardworking team and hard to play against. Just those nights when it would be a really good team, and especially at the back half of the year, we've talked about this so much, you know, the tail end of the season and they're taking on a playoff team and they just get to upset them. That's fun for a team that doesn't have much to play for at that point in the season. And again, that's Montreal now, and the Canucks are obviously on the other side of that now. Thank God that they're on the other side of it now. But yeah, I thought they did a really good job of kind of staving off that early attack from the Habs. And I thought Casey DeSmith, again, first star of the period, I'd say Casey DeSmith. And then from there on, I think the Canucks just kind of woke up and they took it from there. Nikita Zadorov with two goals last night. He was excellent. Elias Pettersson continues his strong play. I thought he was really good. And Harm, one thing that we're going to talk about, and I think we should talk about now, is the Lotto line. Because the Lotto line got reunited. They had a super strong shift. They were buzzing. They looked so good. And then they had like the worst shift I've ever seen the Lotto line play on their second shift. And then they did not get a third shift. And I just thought that was so funny because we did our lineups on earlier this week. And we were talking about, yeah, can you do the Lotto line without Dakota Joshua back? And you and I weren't so sure, but they tried it, lasted two shifts, and it was over. And I don't think we're going to see it again for quite some time.
Well, I don't even know if that was, if it was a plan to give it an extended look. Like, I was surprised they went to it in the first place. And I mean, look, are you really going to judge them off two shifts? One that was outstanding and one that was bad and that they got scored on. I don't think you're watching those two shifts and going, oh, we can never go back to that again. To me, again, I was just more surprised that they went to the Lotto line in the first place. I mean, I wonder what the thought process behind that was, but I think, yeah, I mean, there was really kind of no need to go to it just because it felt like all the lines were already clicking.
Okay. So I was trying to figure this out, Harm. Like, I was trying to figure out why they would go to that. And again, I wasn't at the game last night, so I didn't get to ask Rick Target. So I'm going to guess. This is my best guess, is you want to see, because look, we know that there's been a lot of change in the Canucks line combinations. You want to see how they look against the top line, right? You want to see how they're going to look and how, you know, what can you go to down the stretch? Like, can you go to the Lotto line? So they put him out against Montreal's only line. Like you said yesterday, Montreal's a one-line team. I thought that was very evident last night. And it was. They went up against the Suzuki line. That was the Montreal's top line. They sent out the Lotto line, and it was fine the first shift. And then the second shift, there was puck watching in the neutral zone. There was puck watching in the defensive zone. I thought both Pedersen and Miller were to blame on that goal as well. I thought they had both had a few chances to make something happen. And both of them just seemed like they were kind of tired or something was going on. They just didn't move their feet. Should have Daniel Wagner back on the show. But I saw it and I was like, okay, like this play, they're not going to get another shift. And then, of course, it ended in a goal. And then I was sure it wasn't going to end in a shift, but I was trying to figure it out. And I was just thinking that maybe they didn't like the way they were playing in the second period. The coaching staff didn't like the way their lines were humming in the, you know, back half of the second. Maybe they were a little quiet back then at that point in the period. But man, I was looking at it and just, I was saying there's no way these guys are getting another shift after that play.
Yeah. I want to look back to see some of the shifts because
if you go look at the highlights, you're not going to see that the play actually started in the Montreal end. If memory serves, it's either the Montreal end or the neutral zone, but like it might have been the Montreal end where there was a pass from either Miller or Pedersen that was kind of to nobody, and then everybody just stopped moving their feet. There was just so much puck watching on that play. So like if you go back and watch the highlights, you might not see all of it where it started, but they just puck watched and then they puck watched some more and then they puck watched some more and then the puck was in the back of the net.
So I did notice here that in the second period, Nils Höglander only had two shifts. It says here basically in the back half of the second period. And that's what I remember turning to PJ in the press box and going, like, I don't know if it's because Höglander had that pass that originally led to that Gallagher breakaway, and maybe Tocchet just wanted to not skip send him. A message, but skip him a little bit, just didn't love his game. But I don't know, that feels a little harsh, but that is like, that's an interesting observation for me, that around that time that Tocchet started going to Lotto, that Höglander basically didn't play again. To be clear, he played all his regular shifts in the third period, but in the second period there, especially in the back half, he kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Okay, so what did you think of not just Nils Höglander, but the Elias Pettersson line? What did you think of their game last night?
Funny enough, I thought they controlled play pretty well. I mean, it really felt like lines 1 through 4, all of them had moments where they were creating chances, where they were controlling play. I think the best part about last night, though, was that they had this convincing victory and they weren't leaning on the star players to put the team on the back, right? Like Quinn Hughes was pretty ordinary last night. He was fine. He wasn't exceptional. Same thing you could say for Pedersen, Miller, Besser. They played well, but they weren't exceptional. And so it's great. We were talking on yesterday's show about how we wanted to see, given how weak Montreal is after their first line, that perhaps this is an opportunity for some of Vancouver's depth players to pad their stats a little bit, gain some confidence. And from that perspective, for Ilya Mikheyev to have a multi-point night, for Nikita Zadorov to come through, not that he needed some offensive output, but still to feel some more confidence offensively, for Elias Lindholm to also pick up an assist there. Connor Garland, by the way, that bar down snipe was brilliant, especially because Xhekaj was the one defending the rush. And of course, earlier in the period, Garland Xhekaj sort of got into it, which I thought was hilarious considering the size discrepancy. I don't know. It's hard for me to pick out like one line in particular, because I thought everybody sort of did their job well.
I thought everybody did their job well. I thought Nikita Zadorov did his exceptionally well. We're going to continue the conversation about the game, and I'm sure it'll get brought up in anyone else. There's still a couple points that I want to talk about, but the big news of the day is that Jonathan Lekkerimäki is coming to Vancouver, and coming onto our show is Dave Hall, and he is brought to you by the Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Game. Every all-star needs a sidekick to support them, just like every Wendy's meal needs a six-piece of nuggets. And right now, Wendy's is teaming up with Daily Faceoff Survivor to bring you weekly prizes like free nuggets, burgers, and more. So if you think you're an expert in all things hockey, prove it. And if you aren't already, start adding a six-piece to your Wendy's order for just $3.49. It's a dynamic duo even you never saw coming. Sign up for Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Fantasy today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Let's bring him in, Dave Hall, Canucks Army's prospect guru, who has been writing a ton at Canucks Army right now. You can go find his work at CanucksArmy.com. Dave Hall joins us now. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on. What can you tell us here about the news? Rick Dhaliwal reporting that Jonathan Lekkerimäki is coming to Vancouver for 8 to 10 days.
Yeah, and it's about time. I feel like we've been dreaming of this day for ever since, you know, the news was originally brought up in December. So it's been a long time coming. It is somewhat interesting, 8 to 10 days. You know, Abbotsford heads out on quite an extensive road trip here. They don't get back until, I think, the 1st or the 2nd of April. So given the timeline, you know, this pretty much suggests that this is a Vancouver trip rather than an Abbotsford trip. I mean, maybe I'm thinking maybe, you know, he starts the first couple days in Vancouver, gives him a chance to maybe practice with the squad, work with the coaching staff, check out the systems, basically just see what it's like to be on a playoff bound NHL team. And then maybe in the second half, join Abbotsford just to see, you know, see where his locker is going to be next year and, you know, just figure out all the ropes down there. But it is interesting timing for sure.
So what are you expecting on this trip then? Like, is he just going to practice with the team? Is there a chance he gets into a game? Like, what are we looking at here?
I mean, look, he could play a game. I'm under the impression that as long as he stays under 10 games, he slides, his ELC slides. So, I mean, in theory, I think he could play a game. I'm, you know, kind of tampering expectations. And I think it's more of a, you know, get him over here, just show him the ropes, let him see what it's like to, again, see what it's like to be around a, you know, playoff bound team and just kind of get the systems down before he starts development camp next year. Look, this isn't much of a surprise. Patrick Helvin pretty much laid this plan out all the way back in January. Obviously, we were kind of hoping that we might see a little more, maybe he would just stay, but overall, we're not too surprised that this was ultimately, we knew that he wanted to play in the world championships if it was a possibility. So I don't think he's going to get into a game. I just think it's of a more of a get over here and check out what's going on kind of thing.
Dave, you recently had a great article speaking about some potential NCAA free agent defenseman targets. First of all, how do you feel about this year's NCAA free agent class in general? Like, is it a stronger year? Is it a weaker year? And second, do you want to walk us through maybe one or two of your favorite targets and why they could be appealing for a team like the Canucks?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit weaker. Like, I think if you're going for anyone, it's going to be, you know, a lot of the guys that I mentioned were a bit on the older side, pretty much polished defensemen that you pretty much know what you're going to get with. A lot of defensive defensemen that you're pretty much just kind of hoping in for, you know, almost a Cole McWard kind of slot in, maybe even a little less upside than Cole McWard, to be honest. So nothing special. There is one player that I was particularly high on pretty much all season. I wrote the forward crop a couple months ago, and I actually planned to do the defenseman not too long after, but because I wasn't too high on them, I just wanted to wait and see. But one player that I was particularly interested in happened to play on the same team as the recent signing of the Canucks, which is Christian Felton, and that's Zach Bookman. He's, you know, he's a bit on the younger side. I think he'll probably go back to college, to be honest, just because of that. But he's a bit of a smaller defenseman, but just super. He had 102 points in the Alberta League 2 years ago. So he's just a dynamic offensive defenseman.
Did we lose Dave?
I think we lost Dave.
Great. Yeah. Oh, he's lagging.
I'm lagging.
I can hear you at least now.
Can you?
Yeah, now I can. Okay, sorry. Okay. Continue.
I'll just keep going. I'm not sure what's happening. Sorry about that, guys.
That's okay. Continue.
Zach Bookman. So he had 102 points in the Alberta League 2 years ago. And overall, I mean, obviously he's an undrafted defenseman. So, you know, temper expectations. But in terms of this crop, he's pretty exciting on the back end. He's a smaller guy, skates really well, and can make a lot of plays very, very positively. So he's one guy that I'm keeping my eyes on big time. But aside from that, you're kind of looking at the more older, you know, defenseman kind of guy.
I like the name Bookman because it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode, the Bookman. That's a, oh, is, what was it called? No, the library book. That was the episode. Okay, sorry, I'm getting off topic here. Dave, you're writing about this now, not to spill the article early, because I think it's going to come out either this evening or tomorrow morning. Expectations for Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, and John Lukiermaki. You talked about Lukiermaki a little bit here, but can you just touch on those two players a little bit more?
Yeah, and just to piggyback on what you said, that Bookman, that scene was just one of the best scenes in the whole show. So kudos to you for bringing that up. But yeah, so look, with Lukiermaki, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You can get really excited here and, you know, hope that he's going to be a top line 40 goal scorer, which, look, he's got that nasty shot. There could be a world where he does slot in and find lightning in a bottle next to Elias Pettersson maybe and scores 40. But I think realistically, you're probably looking at a 25 to 30 goal scorer, and a good one too. You know, like he's obviously he's got that shot, but over the year we've really seen him, you know, try to get into the middle of the ice, you know, do what he can to create a little bit more plays. He's been a bit of a hound on the forecheck, so we do like what we've seen in that aspect. But overall, it's going to be a big jump for him, you know, like it's one thing to do that at the SHL level, but, you know, the defenseman's going to be a little more stingy, way more aggressive, and their gaps are just going to be much better. So he's going to have to get pretty creative in finding new ways to get around those nuances of the defenseman in the NHL to score at the level he has at the SHL level. And look, even at the SHL level, it's not like he's scoring 40 goals there either. So, you know, I think overall, you're probably looking at a 25 to 30 goal scorer, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think he can definitely complement the top six quite nicely. I've also been a little bit worried that, you know, the play driving at the NHL level, I'm just not really sure will be there. You know, his most assists at any level was in the J20, and it was 15 assists. So obviously, you know, he's not really driving a lot of plays and making tons of plays out there, but I think overall top six. Now in terms of Elias Pettersson, and I think Cam Robinson, who you had on last week, kind of touched on this, and I completely agree, where I actually think he's going to have a bit of an easier time transitioning. Obviously the speed is going to be a bit of a difference, but he's just one of those rough and tough kind of guys. He plays like a dog on a bone. And I just think overall, in terms of what you're going to be looking at for him in the expectations for next year, I think he's just going to do a pretty solid job at just being that shutdown penalty killing defenseman for the Abbotsford Canucks. And I do want to reiterate Abbotsford Canucks.
All right. You wrote about six Canucks prospects that are gearing up for an NCAA conference championship this weekend, or push toward the conference championship this weekend. What's going on in prospect land?
Yeah, so yeah, big weekend. We got six of them. Actually, two of the games are going on as we speak. And to be honest, I'm expecting BC, so Boston College and Boston University, to both kind of push past their games today and meet in the finals tomorrow. So that's going to be pretty exciting. Tom Rolander, It wouldn't be an upset. They're facing Maine, and they're pretty, you know, they got some pretty good skill. They got the two Nadeau boys who played in for Penticton last year. They're quite skilled. So, you know, they could, you know, ultimately face a loss, but I think it'll probably be BC versus BU tomorrow. And that'll be a really fun and exciting matchup for Canucks prospects. And then you just got guys like Ty Mueller and Jackson Coons, who actually has already scored today, by the way. It's 1-0 for North Dakota. And then we got Jacob Truscott. That's also, he'll be facing with Michigan in the finals already. So.
Dave, I remember watching Aiden McDonough at Penticton Young Stars and thinking to myself, boy, he's so dominant. I expect him to go down to Abbotsford and be a top six fixture. And that hasn't quite materialized yet, but he's been racking up some points lately. What have you seen in terms of him starting to find his footing and producing a lot more lately?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we say it time and time again, confidence is a hell of a drug. And all he needed was to get a few in there. And it was kind of nice. They finally threw him on with Archdeep Baines, who seems to be one of those guys that if you're struggling, throw him on Baines' line and something, you know, typically starts to happen. So that's exactly what's happened. He's finally shooting the puck. That's one thing that we all knew coming into this year that was going to be his big thing. He's a trigger man. He needs to shoot the puck. And we just weren't seeing it at all. He was very stationary. We knew coming in that skating was going to be an issue, and it has been. But overall, he's just looking a lot more confident with the plays that he's making out there. And last but not least, like, the most important thing is he's just shooting. That's he just needs to shoot the puck and get some goals in, which he has, and things are going to start happening for him. So it's definitely been a nice stretch here in the past couple of weeks to see McDonough, because from what we saw before these last 2 weeks, it was, you know, he was getting a little dicey there. He is expiring, so we were kind of wondering what would happen with that. But so far, or lately, he's been showing some life, which is definitely nice.
Dave, good stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking the time, and we will chat with you hopefully next week. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Sorry about the video there.
No, it's okay. The chat's loving it. You're staying incredibly still, is what the chat's saying.
Okay, really, that's like, awesome.
Okay. Awesome, Dave. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, guys.
Dave Hall. From Canucks Army joins us, and his writing is on, you guessed it, CanucksArmy.com. Some really interesting stuff there, Harmon. Look, I'm just going to say it. Put Jonathan LeCaremacchi on the power play.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What did you think of the power play last night against Montreal? Because I thought, like, even on the 5-on-3, they kind of got away from what made them successful against Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't think Philip Peronic is the answer in those situations. It feels like his toolkit outside of the heavy shot is, I don't want to say a little bit limited, because at 5-on-5 we see that he has the vision at times, but it doesn't amplify or take the power play to the next level. So I don't think that adjustment worked. And just overall, the puck movement wasn't crisp. It wasn't sharp. Guys were bobbling pucks. They were slow to make decisions, which happens sometimes. I mean, I'm not going to read too much into it just because they were great against Buffalo. I'm going to try and evaluate them over a larger sample of games, but it is a little bit disappointing just in the sense that you figured, okay, after breaking through against Buffalo, could they start feeling it and go on a run here where you're like, okay, the power play is definitively back. We didn't get that against Montreal. We'll see if they can accomplish that further down the stretch. And one other thing I quickly wanted to mention to piggyback off our discussion earlier when we were talking about the Lotto line, I went back and looked at my notes. There were a lot of penalties in the second period. So I wonder if part of, like, for example, I brought up Hoglander. I don't think that was intentional to keep him, now that I'm thinking about it more, I don't think it was intentional to have him sitting that long in the second period. I think he probably just got caught up with so much special teams, and Hoglander doesn't play a ton outside of, you know, the second power play unit. And Sinochek, Grady brought this up, also brought up in the chat that sounds like Tockett said that he went with Lotalon because there were a lot of special teams in the second period as well. Wanted to get his best players out there. So I think that theory does make most sense.
Still doesn't change the fact that your best players were out there and then they just got scored on after an awful, awful second shift together. Anyways.
So negative, yeah. Quads. 4-1 win and you're just ready to dunk on this one shift that they got just scored on.
Laughing at that shift because I was like, this is... And again, I wasn't in the press box, so you have no way of fact-checking this, but I was sitting at home watching this game, and I saw it all happening, and I was saying, this is going to end in a goal, and this line is not going to get another shift together. That was one of the worst shifts they've ever had. There was so much puck-watching harm. Anyways.
But yeah, even when they first got put together, I thought to myself, once the third period starts, I sort of expect that they're going to go back to their default set.
Yeah, fair enough. But I expected it because... because they got scored on so badly.
Yeah, I'm sure that didn't help.
It did not help. Absolutely. Okay, let's get to anyone else. We'll continue this conversation, Harm. Let's get to anyone else presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat, and it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms apply. With Double Dash on DoorDash, you can order from multiple restaurants or stores in the same delivery without additional delivery fees, so everyone can get what they want and need. Check it out. DoorDash is the app. NATION25 is the code. All right. Get your anyone else's in, folks. Harm, do you want to hear about baseball?
Okay, what topic? That's going to determine whether I say yes or no.
Ohtani is not going to be suspended. It doesn't even sound like he's being investigated. So we don't know what's going to come of the situation, but we talked about it yesterday, and the latest reporting is that he is not going to be facing any discipline, and I don't even think there's like an investigation from Major League Baseball or anything.
The chat does not care for your baseball quads. I'm a leader of the people. Yesterday when you guys brought it up, I had to let him know that I tried to vote it down. But you just decided to roll with it. So
Harm asked for it, man.
I permitted it yesterday. Yeah. You gave him a minute. You gave him a minute and he took like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
It was 90 seconds. It was like 90 to 100 seconds. It wasn't
it's all
minute.
Good. It's all good.
People are very happy that Dave's video was choppy on the show because they're saying it's a sign that AI and technology isn't going to take over because we can just freeze the robots is what we're seeing here.
AE, all right. What should Quad's punishment be if he brings up baseball again?
Look, and then right below it, read the comment, Grady. Read it out loud.
Chat cares. Oh, Gigatronic. Oh, one person out of the 12
That's
people.
Right. Yeah, and don't read the next comment.
The most boring sport in the world. Literally anything is better than baseball.
Well, I'll say this.
We don't.
I'll say this about baseball. In the playoffs, there is nothing like the anticipation,
yeah,
the drama,
the pitch to pitch,
right? When it's a big moment.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know how you get through like game 123 of the regular season when both teams are probably out of the playoff picture.
Yeah.
Like you're telling me I'm supposed to be glued to my TV watching this.
Yeah. There's another 2 months still to go, folks. But here, come watch the Pirates and the Marlins in front of a sold-out crowd of 7,000 people.
All I'm saying is everybody loves to be a baseball hater until you take him to a Vancouver, literally a high-A Vancouver Canadiens game. They're like, this is the greatest sporting event I've ever been to. It's like, okay, yeah, now go to a Major League Baseball game. Baseball's great. And Nick P, boom, right there. That's all I need to see. Nick P in the chat. Baseball is great. Hashtag team quads.
I love baseball and I love Canadiens games, but people go there to be out in the sun, drink beers, muck hot dogs.
No, I go there to scout. I pull up the prospects.
You got your pitch gun. You're taking notes like all the scouts behind home plate. Oh, man.
So, okay, this is great. Calder Kid Petey, and I'm not sure if this is in relation to baseball talk or if this is, just in general for the playoffs. Quads has to grow a playoff beard. If I don't shave, it won't be a beard. It'll be like I get something here going, get something here.
I think we all need to. Let's all shave game one. Or the day before.
I'm not shaving.
No,
yeah, I was gonna say no chance.
Babyface Killa Harm?
No.
Come on.
No.
Harm's beard really suits him. Like yeah, that's what his beard is pretty. You shouldn't shave either.
I do look like a fat little baby when I do shave, so.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I like you guys' beards. Wish I could grow a beard, and I will for the playoffs. If I bring up baseball again, which I will, I'll grow a little beard for the playoffs.
Great point by Marcus here, the World Baseball Final. Japan versus USA, Otani versus Trout was the most exciting thing ever. I actually watched that live from a Canucks game last year on my phone with a bunch of people in the upper bowl with my dad. We're all like hovered around it. It was against, I think, the Blackhawks. So yeah, more exciting than that game.
That was a really, and I get what people say. Sure. Like yeah. Regular season baseball, spring training baseball. Sure. Sure. Fair enough. But yeah, like obviously you don't need me to say it. I think I talked about it for an hour when that actually happened. The Otani versus Trout thing. We've talked about baseball.
We've reached our quota.
I like this one. Nacho Chingu. How about Quads gets a spray tan as punishment? Harmon and I have a running joke. We say this off air all the time, but we sometimes said it on air. Sometimes, so with our lights in the studio when we're at the Wall Center, sometimes our lights for some reason make me look darker than Harmon, which is like a running joke of ours that it looks like I have a spray tan a lot of times. I don't, but look, maybe like I said, I'd do mullet if the Canucks win the cup. Like I'll get the mullet back if the Canucks win the cup. If they reach the cup, I'll get a spray tan. If they reach the cup, I'll do that.
Bring out your inner Italian Jersey Shore style.
That's right.
Get some spiked hair. Yeah. Rocking Ned Hardy
hat.
This is
a good question. This is a question for Grady. So this is from Nar. Grady, what's the Sakaris and Price YouTube live chat like? Are they smarter, dumber, boomery? Do they like squirrels?
Boomery, I would say. Not as... I don't know what the word is. Exciting, let's go with, of the convo chat here. But some days it can get pretty feisty. A lot of Petey slander. That G. Ellis guy comes in there. And he was nowhere to be found the other day after Petey's three-point performance. Weird how that works. But if you're looking for something, 11:30 Monday through Friday, come mix it up in the chat. And we'll get you on the show, too.
Yeah, you know, we've got a lot of good shows in Rinkwide. You got to check out Rinkwide again after all the games. This one from Travis Wall. John Shorthouse and Ray Ferraro are so good together. I wish we had them for all Canucks games. Those two are really good together. I'm a huge fan of John Shorthouse, huge fan of Ray Ferraro. Love me some Dave Tomlinson too. But man, Shorty and Ray, I've loved hearing that duo together. Those guys are awesome.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. And I love Dave too, so I'm biased because I love all three of them, like on a personal level, Shorty, Ray, and Dave, because they're all, when you meet them in person, such friendly, down to earth people as well. And the level of prep that they do, how on top of things that they are when you see them on the road, for example, they're some of the best in the business.
Yeah, exactly. And look, like, let's not forget, they had some huge shoes to fill when John Garrett was taken off the broadcast, right? Like, that's not easy to do. And I think Canucks fans, anybody who watches Canucks broadcasts, I think that's the best possible replacement you could get, right? Is these two guys filling in for John Garrett. John Garrett was just, we missed Cheech. We missed Cheech. And Nar said Cheech was a tough act to follow. But yeah, they are awesome. And people are asking about Scarce and Bryce chat more. Feels like mostly Facebook uncles in that chat. Okay, there's just baseball in the chat. All people want to talk about is baseball, Harm.
So there's a question from Karn that we'll get to in a second. I also want to bring up from that game, we didn't touch on it yet. Vasily Podkolzin, that's the most physical I've ever seen him play, racked up 6 hits. And I think that's such a great sign of progress in terms of him establishing an identity to become a full-time NHL player. Because if he isn't going to, let's say, create a lot of offense or score a lot of points, which I'm not suggesting that he's not capable of it, but we haven't obviously seen a bottom line production yet, then you need to find other ways to stay in the lineup and be the type of player that the coaching staff looks at and go, this guy fills a specific role. And for him to ratchet up the physicality like that, I mean, laying out Mike Matheson, the reverse hit on Caden Gooley, and then later on the same shift, taking another run at him. In the third period, he had a play where he hounded Matheson on the forecheck and set up Bluger for a chance. He looked fast. He looked assertive. And starting to use his size to be more dominant, I love to see that progression from him.
Yeah, and again, you need that bottom line, right? Like, you need that bottom line of production, and he's showing signs, right? Like, he picks up his first point recently. He's showing signs. And so is Ilya Mikheyev and Elias Lindholm. We didn't touch on this yet. Elias Lindholm wasn't at practice today. Our man, Jeff Patterson, was at the rink. He chatted with Rick Tocchet, who said that it is just a maintenance day. So something to keep an eye on. Looks like Lindholm will play tomorrow against the Calgary Flames. Harm, Calgary Flames are in town tomorrow. Andrei Kuzmenko makes his return to Rogers Arena, which, of course, makes us ask the question, just like, what was the last time we did it? Travis Green was the last time we did it. Do we get a tribute video, a little flash on the broadcast, or excuse me, not the broadcast, the Jumbotron during a TV timeout? Like, what do we get for Andrei Kuzmenko, Harm? I'm going to say it's a full tribute video. I don't think it's just a welcome back, Andrei Kuzmenko. I think it's like a full tribute video.
You think so?
What did they do for Pearson last night? Was it just a quick, like, they zoomed in on him and on the bench?
On the ice, actually.
He was about
to take an offensive zone on the wing, of course. The Habs had an offensive zone draw, okay. And it was like a welcome back to Rogers Arena, Tanner Pearson.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wasn't here that long, though. Like, Kuzmenko, does that really warrant a full tribute video? I think a welcome back to
39 goals. Like, that's what I come to is, like, he was a very valuable piece of last year's team. Like, the fan base loved him. I feel like they'll do a little more than like a flash on the screen like they did for Pearson.
Yeah. Well, they should do more than Pearson, but like, do it during a TV timeout, have him on the bench and give him a chance to like wave to the crowd and have more of a longer, whether it's a standing ovation or just a crowd getting loud. A longer moment rather than Pearson's was just because the play was about to start. It was a pretty brief moment. I think that is like what I suggest for Kuzmenko is a good in between compared to Pearson, which was really short, and a full on tribute video, which I think would be a little bit much for a player who had one good year in Vancouver.
I think I should just say like, I don't. Okay. Like a tribute video in my mind is like what you just described. Like,
okay,
I'm not thinking like a pregame or like, you know, like it has to be during a TV timeout and it has to be like a, you know, like a little video montage that's like 30 seconds long of him scoring goals or whatever. And, you know, hugging maybe fans or whatever. He's a fan favorite.
Banana.
Like, he was well liked.
Okay, that's
here.
Fine. Yeah.
Eat a banana. Drink some Pepsi and show a forecheck. Show some hard wall work. Oh, wait, that didn't happen.
Oh, no video to show. I had a really good line in Instant Reaction last night that I wanted to just plug. I wrote about Nikita Zadorov's second goal where he was beaver tailing for the puck, and I wrote, doing his best impression of Andrei Kuzmenko playing defense, Nikita Zadorov beaver tailed for the puck. I was very proud of that line. I was very proud of that, and I wanted to read it. Okay, this one from Karin. Suter, JT, and Brock has the second best expected goals percentage in the NHL. Should they staple Suter to that line for the rest of the season and playoffs? Harm, I'm going to say that it is hard to say no, especially if the rest of the lineup starts picking up their weight the way they have been lately.
Yeah, it's funny because PJ actually mentioned that to me in the press box, the numbers of Suter with JT and Brock, and PJ and Karn are right. They've been dominant. And that's something I actually hadn't quite picked up on until yesterday when PJ mentioned it. So yeah, I mean, when you know the numbers and then watch the shifts of that line, then you do start to notice some of the subtle things that he does away from the puck to drive play, help make it easier for that line to control possession. And I think it's just a testament to how he's such a Swiss Army knife. Like, you can literally plug him anywhere. You can plug him wing, center, first line, fourth line. It doesn't matter where it is. Suter is going to just quietly go about doing his job, being responsible from a two-way perspective. And what a signing by this team to not only have him for the 1 year, but you also have him for next year at $1.6 million. I mean, when you think about how many expiring contracts that this team has, specifically Blücher, Joshua, among a couple of them, it's huge that you have at least some cost certainty with Suter, knowing that he's going to be a surplus value contract that can literally be a band-aid play anywhere in your lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And people in the chat, I think Karin pointed it out, I can't believe Detroit just walked away from him. He can do everything. And yeah, he's been that Swiss Army knife for the Canucks. And like you said, locked up for next year. I'll never forget, I was at the zoo, the Greater Vancouver Zoo, for the first time when they signed that contract. What a great day that was. Okay. Jeremy Lee's asking about line combinations again. I think it's too early to answer. Like, I feel like we've talked about it a lot this past week, but I think if there's one thing we can say is that you don't know who's going to be clicking in a month. Like, I don't think we know who's going to be working in a month. I know who's working right now, and I don't think they should change it up. On that topic, Marcus Toe asked about shuffling D lineups, because Tockett said he's going to do that. We saw Ian Cole get a maintenance day, or excuse me, load management, healthy scratch yesterday. No Juulsen slots in. Didn't love Juulsen's game. I don't know about in the playoffs, but I think for the rest of the season, I think I'm fine with that. Marcus asked about giving Hughes a game off, maybe Hronek. I don't like that, but I think it's worth noting that in the third period, Quinn Hughes was watching a lot of that game. Like, they didn't need Quinn Hughes. Like you said, he wasn't necessarily at his best, but they didn't need him to be, and they didn't even need him on the ice much in the third period.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they go to the extent of giving Hughes or Hronek a full night off. Maybe if it's the last week of the regular season, if you're talking, have a conversation with Hughes and Hronek, see how they're feeling physically. Maybe broach the idea with them, and if they're on board, then maybe you consider it. But if they want to play, let them play. I think, unless there are obvious signs that they're exhausted, that they're playing too much, that they don't look fresh.
Yeah, especially with Hughes chasing down a Norris trophy, right? Like, he's going to want to play. You know he's going to want to play. So, anyways, something to keep in mind. Okay, we've got a lot going on here. What's going to... Okay, so Calgary this weekend. Anything you wanted to get to on the game against the Flames? We'll do a brief preview. It's a Friday, and tomorrow's the game. Obviously, we don't have a show. I'm on Rinkwide tomorrow. I'm excited for that. But anything about the game that you wanted to touch on for tomorrow?
Nothing about the game specifically, but I did want to note on an unrelated topic how, like, the Western Conference is going to be such a bloodbath this year. Like, I know we've spoken about, we know how many legit contenders there are in the West, but also now the two wildcard teams, Nashville and Vegas, are continuing to kind of pick it up. I know Vegas was slumping, and recently they're really starting to tighten up their defensive game. I know for a while, when Mark Stone initially went out, their defensive metrics absolutely plummeted to near the bottom of the league for a stretch of some weeks. But since March 7, and our Athletic colleague who covers Vegas, Jesse Granger, wrote about it today. Since March 7th, Vegas has allowed the fewest expected goals and high danger chances per game in the NHL. So that's not great news if you're another Western Conference playoff team like the Vancouver Canucks, but also Nashville. Like, we know how long they've had this point streak, 14-0-2, I think they are now, since they weren't allowed to go to the U2 concert at the Sphere in Vegas. But in that span, I think a lot of us looked at it as, okay, they're on a hot streak, they're playing some weaker teams, and yeah, okay, along the way, they've beaten a few good teams, but now, like, they so convincingly shut Florida out 3-0 last night, and their underlying numbers have been dominant in that stretch too, like top three, top five in the NHL at controlling play. So seeing how well they're rolling, seeing how well Vegas is starting to get back on track, I mean, you thought for a while, like, okay, the top six teams, maybe you feel really confident that, okay, they're all legit contenders. Now to see like Nashville and Vegas heat up like this, man, it just underscores how much better the West is than the East this year, I think.
Right now, 69 games played for both teams. LA has 83 points. Vegas has 81 points. Whoever's third in the Pacific at the end of the season is going to face the Edmonton Oilers, assuming the Oilers don't catch the Canucks, of course. Whoever's third faces the Oilers, and then whoever doesn't finish third is going to be the second wildcard team, it sure looks like, with the way Nashville's playing right now. So, Harm, I ask you this. Right now, if we're going by probabilities and percentages, the Canucks' most likely playoff opponent is the Vegas Golden Knights, and their second most likely opponent is the LA Kings, and those numbers should be pretty close in terms of probabilities. Which team do you like the matchup more for Vancouver?
Probably, that's tough. Now that Vegas is starting to roll, I think it's LA. Especially if Vegas gets stoned back. Yeah, I'd take LA. It's funny because if you asked me a week ago, I would have been like, Vegas looks lost defensively. So I don't even know if they're going to click and find that chemistry again. But yeah, it's probably LA at this point. But the greater point is, like, for as much as we've had this discussion of who's your ideal first round opponent, I don't think there is an ideal first round matchup anymore. Like, yeah, you don't want to play Vegas, of course, but there's no easy get out of jail free card in the first round. Like there sometimes is in the first round. Like think about in the Eastern Conference, for example, you could end up drawing the Detroit Red Wings, who can barely win a game, or the Washington Capitals, or the sliding Philadelphia Flyers, who since losing Sean Walker have been a mess on the blue line. Like imagine the difference of if the Canucks were, let's say, in the East and they were near the top of the Eastern Conference standings, they drew one of those wildcard teams, versus if you're now in the West and you're like, here's your reward for finishing one or two in the conferences, you know, a team like Vegas or LA or Nashville would typically be a team that you would look at and go, that's first round cannon fodder. But like you can't, when they're playing this well, they're peaking at the perfect time.
Yeah, like last week we were talking about how Nashville was that opponent. Like we were like, oh, well, you don't want to pick your playoff opponent, but if you did, you'd go Nashville. That's the easiest matchup. No, it's not. They're peaking at the right time. They've got UC Soros humming right. You don't want to do that. You do not want to face Nashville in the first round. So all the difference that a week can make. So again, I like asking those kind of questions, but we'll see what happens. There's a poll in the YouTube live chat. People are saying they would rather see Vegas so far than the LA Kings, which really surprises me.
Yeah, that surprises me. I'll also say this. I think Minnesota's done, especially with like they lost their last game and they've got Erickson, Ek and Brodin out. Like they're done. Like I think yesterday we had that conversation, especially now that Vegas won too and they're rolling. Like I'm not even considering the possibility anymore that Vegas misses, and maybe that's a little bit too early for me to draw that conclusion, but I'm just assuming Vegas is getting in at this point and that the West playoff picture's race is done.
In the East, Devils on a two-game win streak. Keep an eye on it.
I was just going to say, Harm, so you're not buying the St. Louis Blues' little mini hot streak here of them squeaking in backdoor?
No, I think it would take a miracle, especially the bigger point now is Vegas is cleaning it up defensively.
Game in hand. Yeah, that
like,
too.
Vegas, they control their own fate. And I think this would be a different conversation if they were like when the Canucks and Golden Knights last played, Vegas looked like a mess in its own end. They couldn't break the puck out. Yeah. They were giving up a lot of grade A chances. And still generating offense hasn't been easy lately for them. It's not like they're winning a ton of games, but on form, if they're starting to tighten it up and Hanifin's had a strong impact, I'm optimistic, especially since Vegas, I think, is a far superior team on paper than St. Louis, that they'll be able to clinch this playoff spot.
Although I will say Jordan Binnington has been one of the best goalies in the NHL the last little bit here. I know his goal save above expected is really good, and Joel Hoffer, brother of Jack, for those like to mess up Rick Dollywall on Twitter. Good goaltending. Who knows? They could ride it out, but yeah, especially with the game in hand Vegas has. And quickly, some breaking news here. Tom Wilson, 6-game suspension for whacking Noah Gregor. Is it nephew of Jason Gregor?
Quads? Yeah, it is. Yes,
in the face.
Yeah. It is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really funny. So I don't know if you knew this, Harm, but well, you didn't know. But anyways, Oilers Nation was the first ones to have the Noah Gregor signing. Every time he signs a contract, Oilers Nation gets the scoop and wow. Jason Gregor tweets it out. Whenever Noah Gregor signs a contract, Jason Gregor is the first reporter to have it every time. And it's quite funny. Okay. The one thing about the standings that we didn't even touch on, gentlemen, is that the Canucks last night move up to 96 points in the standings. That's just one behind the Boston Bruins for the President's Trophy race, which the Canucks are in the thick of. Don't get it twisted. They're right there. But 96 points is three ahead of the Winnipeg Jets, the Colorado Avalanche, and the Dallas Stars, who all Central Division teams are all at 93 points exactly. Like, that's a race. Like, that is a race, is the one for the Central Division crown. Kind of reminds me of the AL West last year. Sorry, I had to.
Yeah, and I mean, if the playoffs started today, we could have a scenario where Colorado and Dallas is a first round matchup. Like, that could just as easily, based on true talent, the caliber of these teams, been a Western Conference final type matchup. And honestly, that's why, I don't know how many people agree, I don't know how many people disagree, I think the first round of the playoffs are by far the best. There's just, and part of it is there's so many series going on that you can focus on the best ones. But there's just something about the first round that is so electric. And I'm not sure why, but the second and third rounds, sometimes it can feel like a bit of, I don't want to say a letdown, but it's just not as exciting, not as thrilling as the first round. I think the first round of playoff hockey can't be topped in the NHL.
I think it's because those wildcard teams are so desperate to, you know, make an impact. And then you have those 2-3 seeds that can go pretty much any way, given, you know, goaltending, special teams, puck luck, all that. So, and then you get to watch sometimes two games at once too, so you can kind of dual screen it up. But it's gonna be so good once we get playoff hockey back in the city, with the weather changing and just kind of the social media age. Like, the last time the Canucks were really good, 2012, 2013, even 2011, like, Twitter wasn't even a thing yet. Can you imagine how crazy it's going to be in this day and age? Oh, man. It's going to be something.
I'm trying to confirm this. It was in the chat. The Green Men are going to be at the game on Saturday, says one person who I've never seen before. He might be trolling. But I'll text Force and see what happens.
Work those sources.
Yeah. We'll see. It'll be one of those again where I yell at you, Grady, after the outro and say, Grady, pull me back up. I got a text back. I'll send that text and we'll see if he's actually going to be there. But yeah, last I talked to him, didn't sound like they were going to be there, but we'll see if they make it a return to Rogers Arena, hopefully for the playoffs, man. Like, I'm really hoping those guys can make it out for the playoffs. Okay. I'm resisting the urge to bring it up. The Savannah Bananas use the Green Men's thing. I didn't like that. Did you see that, Harm? They had two guys in green.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you know who the Savannah Bananas are?
No.
Okay, so they're like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. And now we have a lot to show. I have a lot to show you.
Nah.
But anyways, so they're like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball, right? And yeah, they are. They're a lot of fun. But they used Al Murdoch's voice. Like, they took the audio from
the Stone Cold. They took the Stone Cold.
Everything from the Green Men's triumphant return to Rogers Arena, they did it. And like, they had Al Murdoch's voice blasting through their speakers at the Savannah Bananas game. And then just two random dudes ran down. I don't like that when people do that. I don't like that at all.
It's a copy and paste.
Yeah. A lot of different places have done that, but I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Anyways, thought I'd bring that up because we were talking about the Green Men. Okay. I want to talk about this event. Grady, pull it up. We've talked about it a little bit, but I want to talk about it. Saturday, April 20th at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano. Join us and the rest of the Canucks Army crew for a special tribute to our late friend Jason Botchford, presented by Fountain Tire. Bro, Do Your Playoffs is a media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason that will feature shared memories, special guests, an exclusive performance from the matinee, and the celebration of Vancouver's triumphant return to the playoffs. Plus, this event is in support of the BC Mental Health Foundation. Tickets to this event are only $10, so join us on April 20th for a memorable experience where every ticket purchase contributes to making a positive impact on the community. Get your tickets at nationgear.ca. Like I said, Hollywood Theater, 12 to 5 p.m. Jeff Patterson, Sakaris Price, Harmon, and I are all going to be there, and it is going to be a lot of fun. And of course, Wyatt will be there as well. It's going to be a great event. Really fun to fun to be there. It's going to be a good time. So yeah, get your tickets, nationgear.ca, 19 plus, I should also mention, for all of our younger listeners, 19 plus. Okay, let's see. Oh yeah, John Cena suited up for the Savannah Bananas. Someone wanted me to tell you that, Harm. Nick P brought up John Cena as a Savannah Banana. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm looking at the standings, Harm. It's going to be a bloodbath. Like, the West is obviously great. The East is just like a sleepwalk to the finish line. Nobody knows who's going to make the playoffs out there. But the West is just a bloodbath for seeding at this point. Like, I feel like we know who's going to make the playoffs. It's just we don't know where they're going to slot and what those series are going to be like. And I mean, you could say the same about the East, the top of the Eastern race. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm really intrigued on it.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, considering how deep the West looks, seeding almost doesn't. Like that's a big thing when the teams that are, let's say, in wildcard spots are also looking pretty dangerous. It almost doesn't even matter how the seeding ends up. Ultimately, you're going to play a good team, a good first-round opponent. And that's not to suggest that when we're bringing up, for example, how Nashville is rolling or Vegas is getting back on track, that the Canucks should be worried by any stretch of the imagination, because they've proven themselves as legit contenders this year. But yeah, it just goes to show, compared to the East, for example, like you finish top in your division and, you know, play one of the wildcard teams, that's a pretty favorable spot to be in compared to if you do it in the West, doesn't really mean as much.
Okay, we'll close it on this one. Jeremy Lee, in the list of teams currently in the wildcard, who is likely going to pull off an upset? I don't want to say Vegas because it seems like they might play the Canucks, but who has the best chances out of Nashville, Vegas, and then Tampa, Detroit of pulling off an upset? I don't think that Tampa, who would play New York in round one, is going to upset them. I don't think Boston is going to get upset by Detroit. And in the West, I don't know. I will say that the Preds could upset the Jets, like kind of in that getting hot at the right time thing. I'd say the Preds could upset the Jets, but Vegas versus Vancouver, it feels like that might be the one that leads to an upset, unfortunately. I will say, though, I'm going Nashville. Like, I'm going to say not just because I'm a giant homer and I want to see Vancouver get to the second round. I think Nashville is just getting hot at the right time. Like, I think Nashville over Winnipeg. Like, I think that's the likeliest upset.
Yeah, I don't even know if you could call Vegas in a wildcard spot beating whoever they play if it is Vancouver an upset. Like, let's be honest, in the eyes of people outside of Vancouver, I think Vegas could be considered favorites since they've just won the Stanley Cup. Like, for example, the Athletic will have playoff predictions from staff once the first round matchups are all determined. And if Vancouver and Vegas are a matchup, if I had to guess, I think most people would take Vegas.
I think you're right. And I think we're going to maybe see that
in round one. To that point, going to the East, like, would we really be all that shocked if Tampa Bay were to find a way through the second round, given how well Vasilevsky has played in the playoffs? Like, I know their depth isn't what it used to be, but the way Kucherov is playing, Point, Hedman's been really good. I wouldn't count them out either. They're not really a traditional like underdog though, right? Given how well they have the last few years.
I think I'd be surprised, but I'd be the least surprised because of all of the things that you just mentioned. But anyways, yeah, we'll close it out there.
Metro, I wanted to quickly mention, if you're in the Metro, if Philadelphia stays in that third seed spot, you probably don't want to win the division so you can play Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're Carolina, how lucky do you feel right now that you've brought in Gensel and Kuznetsov, who are firing in all cylinders? Yep. Kochetkov has solved your answers in net. Plus, Freddie Anderson, since coming
back,
he's
been really good. They've both been good.
He's been really good. Really good, too. And your first-round opponent, as of now, is scheduled to be the reeling Philadelphia Flyers. Like, it'd be great if you're Carolina to avoid finishing ahead of New York and drawing Tampa instead, right?
Imagine Torts scratches Couturier in the playoffs. No, it won't happen.
I was going to say, just Couturier start game one of the playoffs? Yeah. We'll see what happens. That situation is absolutely wild down in, down in Philly. That's unbelievable. Okay. Logan Van Dyke is requesting that we do no more baseball talk next show. So I'll do my best. I'll do my very best. But for now, we will close it out there. For my co-host, Harmon Dollar, our technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Gugelli. Thank you so much for this episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.